This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News House Speaker Election. I'm Mike Dubusky. The House is in a holding pattern right now as Mike Johnson appears likely to lose his first attempt to take the House speakership and maintain the role he's had since 2023, with Republican Thomas Massie saying ahead of the vote he planned to vote against the Louisiana Republican, Johnson could only afford to lose one more Republican vote. In the last hour, he lost two. Ahead of the vote, Johnson laid out his plans for the speaker role.
Johnson posting a lengthy statement on social media about how he would deliver if elected again. Johnson committing to creating a group of independent experts that would work with both House committees and DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency Group created by President-elect Donald Trump, set to be led by his allies, Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy.
ABC's Olivia Rubin. Johnson right now is meeting behind closed doors with some of the holdout votes. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For AM 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. A man is still at large after allegedly killing two children and an adult in New Lisbon on Monday. According to police, 47-year-old Virgil Thew is considered armed and dangerous and should not be approached. If you spot him, call 911. Police said that Thew is the lone suspect in the death of 33-year-old Elizabeth Colba, as well as the deaths of two girls, ages 13 and 12. Police said in a release that they have received tips that he is still in the New Lisbon area and that they are investigating the deaths as homicides. A 4K student was killed when they were hit by a bus in southeastern Wisconsin yesterday morning. According to Hamilton School District officials, the kindergartner was waiting to get on a bus at one of the district schools when they were hit by another bus. The Waukesha County Sheriff's Office says the driver of the bus, which was carrying students, is cooperating with their investigation. All classes are canceled today in the Hamilton School District, which is in Sussex, Wisconsin, due to the death.
Are you interested in running for a local nonpartisan office this spring? Now is the time to get your paperwork in. To get on the ballot for the upcoming spring election, you'll need to be eligible for the office you're running for, file a notification of candidacy, circulate nomination papers, and file a campaign finance form. If you don't file your paperwork in time, you can still register as a write-in up until noon the Friday before the spring election on April 1st. If needed, a primary will be held on February 18th.
The deadline to file paperwork is on Tuesday, January 7th at 5 p.m. If you need to get rid of your Christmas tree, the city of La Crosse will be collecting them starting on Monday through the 17th. Trees need to be clear of any lights, ornaments, and decorations, and need to be put out on the boulevard before 7 a.m. on Monday. Tree pickup will not follow garbage collection routes. You can also drop trees off at Merrick Park in the green recycling dumpster between 7 a.m. and 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. The city says they will not collect any artificial trees.
You can take Civic Media with you anywhere you go with the free Civic Media app. Download it now at civicmedia.us/app. From the Civic Media Newsroom in Western Wisconsin, I'm Jimmy Cuska for AM 1490 WLCX and lacrosseeagle.com.
The Bucks fall to the Nets again. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks lost to the Nets, 113-110. Milwaukee now 1-3 against Brooklyn. Doc Rivers after the loss.
I mean, all four games have basically been the same game. We came back and won. They beat us the first game. And then the game here without Giannis and Dame, that was the only game that we actually had a big lead.
The Bucks will host Portland tomorrow night. Men's college basketball, the Wisconsin Badgers back in action against the Iowa Hawkeyes tonight at the Kohl Center. NFL, it's the Packers and the Bears at Lambeau Field. Green Bay's already clinched a playoff spot, so will they play all of their starters this Sunday?
I think we got to go in with the mindset that everybody can expect to play the entire game, and we're going to win, you know, play a football game to win the game. And that's how we always approach it and always will approach it. And, you know, some guys could have less snaps than they normally might get, but that is to be determined.
That's Packers head coach Matt LaFleur with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Partly cloudy today and cold, with high temperatures reaching the upper teens and winds blasting out of the northwest at 25 miles per hour, it's making it really feel near zero. And overnight tonight, the winds won't quit, so wind chill values fall to near 10 below. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
Currently, it's 21.
Matt and Air on Air. This shouldn't be a thing.
Hot Dr. Pepper is the hottest holiday drink, but is it any good?
Jade, I'd like to answer that question.
Yes.
No. Have you ever had a hot soda in your life?
Yes, they're terrible. You can also do apparently 80% eggnog and 20% Dr. Pepper.
Get out of my country.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Albaugh Show.
What's going on in Washington today as we move into 2025? Have your antenna up. Don't rely on all the media sources, just your own wisdom, your own heart, your own gut. Listen to what they're saying about our friends and neighbors and family, because we innately know these people that we live with every day in our communities. Don't allow words and thoughts to tear us apart. Hold fast to that which we know, which is good.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as we will preview the inauguration of the Wisconsin State Senate and Wisconsin State Assembly and look forward to what's ahead in 2025. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for The Todd Albaugh Show.
Greetings and welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. I am not Maggie Dawn. I am Dan Schaefer. I am your guest host this afternoon on the Maggie Dawn Show across the Civic Media Network. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie will be back on Monday, so you should be looking forward to that. But we are here with a great show planned for you here on a Friday. I'm here with Cardi Glisper on the board. How are we doing over there, Cardi?
Pretty good, man. It's Friday, man. Fantastic. How are you feeling?
I'm doing well. It's been a kind of, you know, the discombobulating week, frankly. We've got, the holiday on a Wednesday, right. New Year's Day being on a Wednesday. Kind of threw me off a little bit. We're back here in studio yesterday for the show. In case you missed it, we had a great one yesterday as well. And then back here to wrap things up till 4 p.m. with you here live from Racine, Wisconsin on a Friday to get us off into the weekend. You got any big weekend plans, Cardi?
Not as now. I'm probably going to sit back and relax and get some sleep. Yeah,
that's probably the move. It's been a busy week. You know, people have a busy New Year's. People have running around, travel, all this kind of stuff.
This weekend seems like
the time to chill out a little bit. Stay inside. It's going to be cold.
Recombobulating is the recuperating.
There we go. Recombobulate, recuperate, right. Recharge, and we'll be back at it on Monday. But we have a terrific show here planned for you today on the Maggie Dawn Show. So later in the show, we'll be joined by Phil Rocco. He's a political science professor at Marquette University. He's a regular contributor at the Recombobulation Area and just wrote before the Christmas holiday here, wrote a terrific piece, essay, on shared revenue in Waukesha County. Phil has been documenting this, analyzing the issue of Wisconsin's shared revenue and local government funding for quite some time for us at the Recombobulation Area. He actually won a Gold Milwaukee Press Club Award for his coverage of the shared revenue battle and the legislative battle over Act 12 and the law that was passed in 2023, already 2 years ago now that legislation was kind of the highlight of that session in 2023. And Phil really broke that down in a really interesting way and talked about the limitations of that law, not quite bringing the level of local funding that a lot of counties, a lot of municipalities need. So as that debate was, unfolding
There was so much, you know, there was a big part of it that was about Milwaukee and its push to raise the local sales tax to pay for a bunch of critical services at the city level, at the county level, shift the pension system over to the state system from the city's system. And, you know, so many people over the course of that debate were saying, oh, it's all about, you know, Milwaukee's mismanaging its finances, and it's all about, oh, we're blaming Milwaukee for everything. Well, as it turns out, a lot of other counties and municipalities across the state are facing many of the same issues, and we see that coming to a head in Waukesha County earlier this fall when Waukesha County Executive Paul Farrow was pushing to raise the sales tax for the county, raise it by 0.5%, not dissimilar to what a lot of other counties across the state have done. But after pressure from former Governor Scott Walker, who's now a Waukesha County resident, and a number of members of the business community in Waukesha County, Farrow backed down from that. And so Phil Rocco really took a deep dive into what was going on there in Waukesha County, the wealthiest county in the state, which is also struggling with the issue of local financing. So they had to make a number of budget cuts in Waukesha County in their last budget. And after that was passed, the Waukesha County Board passed a resolution urging the state of Wisconsin to provide the county with additional shared revenue. So we're going to be talking about that in depth with Phil for much of the second half of the show here on the Maggie Dawn Show in the 3 o'clock hour. And then also earlier in the show, we're going to be joined by Chris Drosner, who is the executive editor of Milwaukee Magazine. He also writes the popular Beer Baron column. And if you've been following just kind of some of the business news in and around, especially in the Milwaukee area, over the past few weeks and months, there's been a lot of news about breweries closing or consolidating or lots of change coming to the brewery industry. So we're going to be talking to Mr. Drosner a little bit further about that, because I think he's going to offer some interesting perspective on that as well. And I think it's going to be, you know, there are so many ins and outs of this, but it's just a signifier of a whole lot of change in an industry that is obviously critical to the image of Milwaukee, but also it's a sign of where things are economically for this particular industry as well. So if you'd like to join that conversation with us, with Chris Drosner later in the show here in the 2 o'clock hour. And then we will also be joined by Phil Rocco for much of the 3 o'clock hour as well. And if you'd like to join that conversation, you can give us a call, shoot us a text at 855-752-4842. That is 855-75-CIVIC. And we will be taking your calls, reading your texts on the show as well. We're also, of course, live streaming on YouTube, Facebook, the platform formerly known as Twitter.com. And we will be, engaging with you as well on all of those various platforms throughout the show today. So some national news that was breaking just before we began the show today was on the election for House Speaker, for Speaker of the House at in Congress, as many of the new members of Congress are being sworn in today. And there was it's a little bit of chaos and palace intrigue and whatever else it might be, but it appears that Mike Johnson will again be elected Speaker of the House. Johnson, you know, this seemed to be expected. There was some sort of like chaos and palace intrigue and whatever it might be about Johnson potentially not winning that vote on the first time around, or maybe needing a number of cycles to win that vote for Speaker of the House. But that just seems to me like it's just a little bit more of a media circus than actual news that we should be following. And I think this is kind of the approach that I want to be taking to, you know, covering the Trump 2.0 era. We can all so often get lost in the chaos, in the inflammatory statements, in whatever it might be. But I think it's best to keep our eyes focused on where the rubber meets the road, because there's going to be nonsense. There's going to be these type of, you know, behind the scenes, who said what to who, who's knifing who, whatever, blah, 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 on these different types of stories. And it so often, I think that's the part of the show that I think we can kind of fast forward on, and or just kind of tune out on and just catch up on and when it happens. So as I was driving from my house in Milwaukee down to our studio in Racine today, I was following this news, and I tweeted out, "Wake me up when the chaos and palace intrigue part of the show is over and they end up electing Speaker Johnson to be Speaker of the House anyway." And by the time I got here to the studio in Racine, that is exactly what happened. So, you know, a short nap, I guess, for to continue the metaphor there of just when I was waking up after the chaos is over, and a short, brief period of chaos as well. And so it appears that, as expected, Mike Johnson of Louisiana will again be the Speaker of the House with the rather slim, you know, House majority, considering how well Republicans did across the country in the November election. So we'll have to be monitoring how he can keep that caucus together, whether there will be detractors, and how that exactly will play out. But not a whole lot of surprise today. I think he maybe needed two rounds of voting to be elected House Speaker, but he ended up getting 218 votes to Democratic Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries' 215 votes. One other vote and zero present votes. Also today, we saw some of the swearing in of U.S. senators from as the next Congress begins. Senator Tammy Baldwin was sworn in by Vice President Kamala Harris today to serve another 6 years in the Senate. Tammy Baldwin had a pretty great op-ed today in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel talking about why she is headed back to the Senate for another term, and just talked a lot about who her idol is in the Senate, and that being former Senator, the late Herb Kohl. And I had the opportunity to interview Tammy Baldwin at length earlier this last summer. And one of the quotes that really stuck with me from that interview is when she said, "Never mistake progress for victory." And I think that's a quote that I'm going to continue to return to, I think, in this era as we head into a second Trump presidency, as we head into, it's kind of some uncharted waters for what this might be, and checking on, monitoring so many different things. And I think there's going to be some moments of progress. There's going to be some moments of difficulties, but I think it's important to, I always keep that quote from Tammy Baldwin in the back of my mind. And I have for the last few months since I talked to her. So never mistake progress for victory. Some important words from Senator Tammy Baldwin, who will be serving another 6 years in the U.S. Senate. Once again, I am Dan Schaefer. I am your guest host today. If you are unfamiliar with me and my work, I am the founder of the Recombobulation Area and now the political editor at Civic Media at the Recombobulation Area. Today, we also have a new piece posted by Sean Fetteplace about why Wisconsin should expand badger care. So do check that one out and subscribe to the Recombobulation Area to support our work there as well. After the break, we are going to be joined by Chris Drosner, who's going to be helping us make sense of what's going on with all of these breweries that have been closing around Wisconsin. So he will be back joining us after the break here. Stick with us on the Civic Media Network on the Maggie Down Show with your guest host, yours truly, Dan Schaefer. And we'll be right back.
Eagle 1490 AM. If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down and get it going slower.
IZERVAY is proven to slow GA progression.
IZERVAY. IZERVAY
or Avacincaptad pegol is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. IZERVAY can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. IZERVAY may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about IZERVAY today.
IZERVAY gets GA going slower.
Visit IZERVAY.com. That's IZERVAY.com.
Today's job market is full of demand for skilled trade workers. Electricians, welders, mechanics, these and other trades are the backbone of every community. They're also a huge part in making sure the Army National Guard is always fulfilling its mission of service to our country and communities. Soldiers train to keep the power flowing, engines running, and supplies moving. The skilled trades these soldiers perform are the same ones needed in today's civilian workforce. Army National Guard soldiers are on the fast track to learning skills that can set them up for success at home with companies looking to hire the best. With options from plumber to helicopter mechanic and everything in between, soldiers are able to select the trades that best fit their lives. Their resumes are being built through their paid training and part-time service. Find out how you too can learn a trade profession and serve your community and country by visiting NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard, aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
A teenage anarchist looking for revolution. I had the style, I had the ambition. Read all the authors, I knew the Russellians. There was a war.
Greetings and welcome back to the Maggie Don Show. Good afternoon to everybody listening in across the Civic Media Network. Maggie is back on Monday, so you're stuck with me for one more day before we switch it back to your regularly scheduled programming. I am your guest host this afternoon. My name is Dan Schaefer. I am the founder of the Recombobulation Area and the political editor here at Civic Media. And for our next segment, we're going to be talking a little beer. I think it's Friday. It's a good day to talk a little bit of beer. So we're going to be joined by the executive editor of Milwaukee Magazine, and the beer baron himself, Chris Drosner. Chris, welcome to the Maggie Don Show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So there's been a lot of news over the past couple months about beer, about breweries in and around Milwaukee, and a number of them closing, a number of them kind of consolidating. And frankly, I'm a little discombobulated. A lot has happened here over the past couple months to many of my favorite spots in and around Milwaukee. So help us recombobulate here, Chris. What is going on with all of the change in the brewery industry here in Milwaukee?
Well, it's the beginning of a year, and that's how banks think. So I think some of these businesses that have been struggling for a while, I think they've had their leashes kind of extended for a while, and this is probably the end of those leashes. We had a lot. So this weekend we've got two closures coming up. That's Enlightened Brewing, which was announced last month, and then City Lights, which was a bit more abrupt, also closing this weekend. That was announced just last week. We also had Mobcraft closing at the end of November in Milwaukee, and coming up. Well, the other two weren't closures, but they were acquisitions and changes related to, you know, brewery business health, I would say. One is Sahale in Grafton, Sahale Ale Works being acquired by Gathering Place based in Milwaukee. And then the big one was Good City, which was one of the kind of stars, I would say, of the 2016 Milwaukee brewery boom, is being acquired by Explorium, which was one of the smaller, lower profile openings in of 2016. They operate two brew pubs, one in the Southridge Mall and one in the Third Ward. So it's kind of a smaller operator acquiring a larger, what had been, or at least perceived as a larger operator. So a lot of changes going on. And we think that Good City will probably be phased out as a brand, is how it looks at this point.
Yeah, that, I mean, of all of these, I think that's probably the one that surprised me the most was the one about Good City. You know, they've got the location right in the Deer District. They've got, you know, they've been part of that production facility at Century City. They've got some good beer, right? So it, that one was a little bit surprising to me. Is that the one that kind of stood out to you as well as kind of the more surprising news of all of these kind of brewery, you know, consolidations, closings, whatever?
Yeah, I think so. If you look at the way that Good City's business has evolved, it kind of makes sense. They opened as primarily a production brewery with a pretty hearty restaurant taproom presence. And after 2019, after the pandemic, there was more of a shift toward, obviously on-premise, on-site sales weren't happening during that time. So a lot of places were pivoting to canning beer that they hadn't been doing before, but Good City had already been doing that. And they actually kind of went the opposite way in opening additional locations. I think there was an interview that just dropped today with Dan Catt, one of the co-founders of Good City. And he said, we got into this business to be basically a production brewery. And that's the part of, you know, distribution, buying six packs to take home or mm-hmm. at the grocery store or something like that, versus on-site, you know, on-premise sales, which are, you know, or essentially a brew pub model, which is what the Explorium does. And he said 80 to 90% of our business is now that, and that's not really why we got into this business. And is there somebody else that's better suited to kind of handle that? Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty eyes open kind of assessment of your own, business strategy and what you want to do going forward.
We're talking with Chris Drosner. He's the executive editor of Milwaukee Magazine and the Beer Baron himself, talking about a bunch of the changes happening in the brewery industry. And yeah, you talked about that 2016 brewery boom that we had in Milwaukee. So in one of my past lives here, I was a reporter at the Milwaukee Business Journal, and that was in 2016. And so on my beat was kind of the food and beverage industry and manufacturing, and the beer industry fell into that. And so I felt like every couple of weeks I was covering a brewery launch, and it was Third Space and Good City and City Lights. A couple other ones. Black Husky moved from the Northwoods down to the River West neighborhood in Milwaukee. And it just seemed like it was just kind of this next generation of these great Milwaukee breweries. And some of them, I think, are sticking around and still growing. Third Space seems to be continue to be in terrific shape. That's probably my favorite beer that I drink the most is the Third Space Happy Place. But I, you know, the rest of them, you know, it's been 8 years now. And so running, you know, operating a brewery for 8 years, do you consider that success too? Because I think that's a pretty long time for some breweries to be lasting.
You know, I talked to Tommy Vandervoort from Enlightened about this, and he said, you know, I mean, of course you feel like, you know, it's, if the business were a certain level of success, it would be going on. But he points to, and I think this is something really critical with breweries and other businesses, like, you know, hospitality businesses, is the people that you come into contact with and love your product and love your experiences and, you know, you really build a strong bond with those people, and they have great memories that they will have forever of all the good times that they had in your tap room, or even with your beer in the backyard, or, you know, listen to Uke on the radio or whatever. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. But yeah, I mean, this is a bottom line type week for the industry right now.
Yeah. Well, Chris, what you're going to join us for another segment here as well on the show too, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So Chris is going to stick with us after the break here. We got to pay some bills here at the Civic Media Network. So we're going to head to a break here. And Chris is going to join us for one more segment to talk about all of this discombobulating change in the Milwaukee brewery scene. Stick with us here on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matt and Air on Air.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
USDA's H5N1 monitoring program set the lofty goal of eradicating the virus from U.S. dairy herds. I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report, and Lucas Sostrom of the government affairs team at Edge Dairy Cooperative says the average producer shouldn't feel much impact from the program.
Unless, of course, their herd is positive and they wouldn't have found that before. That's maybe good monitoring, maybe catch things faster. And USDA has stated that their goal is to stamp this out. So I can tell you across our nine states, we have been asked to provide feedback. We'll be providing feedback. And across our nine states, they're kind of all the same as what I described. Doing it at the silo level is a problem. We turn over those milk silos at the processing plant fast. And so the trace back actually becomes more of a burden than necessary. Doing it at the milk truck level is a lot more samples, but maybe that's faster. And then doing it at the farm level, I think, is just probably impossible. But ultimately, it's up to the states on how they want to do it, the percentage they want to get. And we'll learn from these first six states as we go forward.
I'll have more agriculture news right after this.
Giving back, it's at the heart of the Wisconsin farmer, and it starts with supporting the backbones of our community. That's why the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board invests in soy foam for our firefighters. Soy foam TF1122 is the first and only firefighting foam green screen certified at the gold level. As a PFAS-free firefighting foam, it's safe for you and the environment. A safe future for your community. Thanks to your soy checkoff. Learn more at wisoybean.org.
Can you predict the future? I can't. That's why when I'm planting soybeans, I treat with Heads Up seed treatment. With more than 15 years of research, Heads Up offers proven protection against both white mold and sudden death syndrome. So no matter what the year throws at you, you've already taken that first step to be prepared. Don't let your beans suffer from disease when they're just starting to look their best. Tell your seed dealer you need Heads Up seed treatment. Learn more at headsupst.com.
I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report with a look at your agribusiness news. The Fund for Rural America, Compeer Financial's corporate giving program, is offering 123 scholarships to students this spring. Graduating high school seniors with an agriculture or rural background, or those planning to major in an agriculture-related field, are encouraged to apply by March 15th. The $1,500 scholarships go towards educational tuition expenses at community colleges, universities, or technical schools. Qualified applicants must be graduating seniors residing in Compeer Financial's 144-county territory with a 3.0 GPA or higher. This is based on a combination of written essay submissions, academic achievement, and agricultural community or youth organization involvement. Students can find more information and complete the online application at compeer.com/scholarships. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Partly cloudy today and cold, with high temperatures reaching the upper teens and winds blasting out of the northwest at 25 miles per hour. It's making it really feel near zero. And overnight tonight, the winds won't quit, so wind chill values fall to near 10 below. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
Currently, it's 21.
The Todd Alba Show.
What's going on in Washington today as we move into 2025? Have your antenna up. Don't rely on all the media sources. Just your own wisdom, your own heart, your own gut. Listen to what they're saying about our friends and neighbors and family. Because we innately know these people that we live with every day in our communities. Don't allow words and thoughts to tear us apart. Hold fast to that which we know, which is good.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Dom Salvia.
Next time, former U.S. attorney and host of Amicus, a law review, James Santel joins me. Was Merrick Garland the worst AG ever? Plus, updates on the speaker's race and the Wisconsin Election Commission investigation. Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
To the Maggie Dawn Show. I am not Maggie Dawn. I am Dan Schaefer. I'm your guest host this afternoon on the Civic Media Network. Thank you so much for joining us today. If you'd like to join the show, join the conversation that we're having here, the number is 855-752-4842. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We'd love to hear from you. We're also live streaming on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform formerly known as Twitter.com. We are joined by our special guest for this portion of the show, Chris Drosner, the executive editor of Milwaukee Magazine and the Beer Baron himself. We've been talking about one of the trends that we've been seeing in recent weeks and months, a number of small craft breweries in and around the Milwaukee area in particular that have been a number of them have been closing, some consolidating. But it's just a whole lot of change in the industry, and it's been a little discombobulating. So Chris has been helping us make sense of what's going on. And I guess one of the questions, you know, that I had about this change is if this is reflecting some sort of larger change about how people drink and how people enjoy themselves. Is this signifying, you know, a decline of craft brewing, getting more to kind of the domestic brew, Miller Bud type of beer, or people gravitating more towards seltzers or finding some other way to enjoy themselves? Is that what's happening here? Are we seeing a little bit of a decline in craft beer in general?
To all of that, we're definitely seeing a lot more competition from, you know, seltzers have been around for a few years, and there's a lot of evidence that that's kind of flattening or dipping back down, but ready to drink cocktails is one that is a big thing. These kind of pre-mixed cocktails that come in a can look a lot like beer, packaged a lot like beer.
Get your gin and tonic in a can and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure, like the cut water spirits, stuff like that.
Yeah,
those are definitely seen as a major competitor to, you know, gut space. Basically, there's only so much of this stuff that you know people can really take. So, you know, that's definitely a big part of it. I also think that most people in the craft beer industry think that THC is having something to do with it. There's a lot of THC seltzers that, to their credit, craft brewers are getting in on and making now that stuff is mostly legal, we'll call it.
Still a little bit of a gray area, it seems like, in Wisconsin at least, a number of other states, seeing significant rises in popularity, it seems.
Yeah, and that's why you're seeing the big players stay away from it. So that's creating this field for smaller breweries to try some of these products. I think, to your point, like beer, it generally is down. So it's not that people are switching over to Modelo, which is now the number one beer in the country, or, back to Bud Light or Miller Lite or whatever. I think it's more of just kind of everything else chipping away at what had always been a pretty small share of, alcohol industry, and particularly, and beer. You know, it was something like 10 to 15% of sales at its high watermark.
So it's the seltzer cutting into it. It's the cannabis water or whatever it's called.
Yeah, it's all that stuff. It's NA beer is a part of it too. Some craft brewers are doing that too. We certainly see that in January. That's a factor in the kind of challenging time of year that breweries face this time of year.
Yeah, you were mentioning that. So this time of year that we're, you know, the deep winter months here in Milwaukee and Wisconsin, when people are not out at those street festivals going back for another round or whatever it might be. You were saying that this is a tricky time of year for breweries in general. Tell me more about that.
Every brewer that I've ever talked to says that January and February are their their hardest months. Most breweries operate at a loss during those months and make up for it with, you know, summertime when, as you mentioned, all these street festivals and beer gardens and everything's going. On the macro scale, you have Miller Park or American Family Field. Sorry. Think of how much beer is consumed there. You got 30,000 people a day in there, and that's, you know, that you can't really make that up. So it's just a slower time. Plus, it's just winter, and people don't want to go out as much. There's less disposable income after the holidays. So all these kinds, dry January is a trend that does move the needle to some degree. So, you know,
be a factor only for, you know, even if it's just like first couple of weeks of the month, right?
Yeah, but I do think it's the crowd that is into dry January, I think, largely intersects with the craft beer, the people who are interested in craft beer. So, sure. That's why we have seen all this activity it's not a coincidence. This is all happening around January 1st. The banks that are looking at their loan schedules know that they're not going to make up, that these businesses aren't going to make up lost. They're not going to get out from underwater if their business is underwater in January and February. So they're saying, okay, we're done. I mean, especially with the abrupt closures. I mean, I'm not privy to what was going on inside City Lights, but that's a pretty sudden closure.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about. I think that, what is their last day, like today or tomorrow or something like that? City Lights Brewing.
I think City Lights and Enlightened are both last day of service on Sunday.
Yeah, so that one was pretty surprising and abrupt and how quickly they closed. And I always really loved their space at City Lights. You know, when I covered that opening back in my Milwaukee Business Journal days, you know, just seeing that space and how they were putting it together was so remarkable. And that very beautiful old building that they were helping restore in the Menominee Valley. You know, you can see it on 994 when you're driving into Milwaukee and what have you. You know, that one, the abruptness of it surprised me. What exactly happened there, do you think?
Well, they had announced in spring that the Ghostmans, who own the brewery, this is their second go at a craft brewery here, announced that they were ceasing full-scale production, basically just going to keep the tap room open. They stopped their distribution, their shipments to distributors. That was back in May, I think, or April. So, you know, I guess the writing was on the wall. But you're right. I mean, that was a great spot, but maybe I always wondered about the location there being in the Industrial Valley. You know, you mentioned Third Space earlier, similar age brewery, similar scale in terms of like production capacity, at least to start, and similar location, but you know, Third Space has had the juice and City Lights just kind of didn't. And it's hard to look at these. There's so many factors that go into the way a brewery and a brewery business are run that we can't see, you know. We can see the branding, we can taste the beer, we know we may like it, we may not like it, but it may continue even if we don't like it. So but under the hood, there's so much stuff going on that we don't know about until sometimes we do, when things close and people go on Reddit and say things. So
yeah.
That's a little, I'm not sure if we air that dirty laundry here, but you know, it's
you're saying I should not pull up the subreddits right now and start reading those comments verbatim from people who are totally legitimate sources of information. Yeah, maybe I'm not doing that today.
Well,
but
I mean,
yeah,
this person kind of put their name on it and said, and there's clear love for the job and the business and for what they were doing, but it drifts. And sometimes, you know, you can kind of hold these things of being critical and wanting it to work at the same time. And I think this was the, you know, some people take that opportunity to explain the inside story.
To get some takes off. Yeah.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us, I am not Maggie Dawn. I'm filling in for Maggie Dawn. My name is Dan Schaefer. I'm your guest host this afternoon. And we have been joined for the last couple segments here by Chris Drosner, who is the executive editor of Milwaukee Magazine and also has been writing the Beer Baron column for, gosh, how long have you been writing the Beer Baron column now for?
Oh, 13 years, maybe?
13 years.
14 years.
So chronicling a lot of change over that time period in the brewing industry in and around Milwaukee and Wisconsin.
Yep, it's been a lot. It's been a long ride here. You know, I wrote in my year-end piece for the State Journal that, you know, ever since I've been doing this, it's been openings. Is all you talk about is openings and expansion, and that's never really been. I mean, for the past several years at least, a lot of people in the industry have told me that they think that it was unsustainable, not because there's so many breweries and only so much, you know, competition and stuff, but that it's just not a healthy sign of an industry when you don't have some failure, you know, when restaurants close all the time, bars close all the time. Breweries are a little different because they have more capital investment, like all that equipment to make all the beer costs a lot of money. So you would expect a lower failure rate there, or maybe failure is the wrong word, but closure rate, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we had 13 breweries close this year, according to my friend Joel Geyer, who tracks all this stuff in Wisconsin, and then three openings. And, you know, and that leaves us with about 263 breweries. That's not an about, that's a very specific number. 263 breweries. So that's a net failure rate of about 5%. And that doesn't include city. I don't think that includes City Lights. But, you know, I mean, like, even with the churn that we've seen in the last couple of weeks, this is definitely a blip. But I think I don't know that it really changes a whole lot in terms of, like, the health of the industry. And certainly, you know, people have been worried. People inside the industry have been, you know, making grim faces for a while. But I don't know that this is like a like the, you know, the bubble bursting or something like that. Right. So
not exactly like a sea change.
It's a little bit of context to kind of keep in mind that, you know, failure is part of a normal business and industry.
Yeah.
It's definitely a good time to be buying brewery equipment if you're thinking about starting a brewery.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. And I think also a good time to be visiting breweries. Like you said, it's not a, you know, it's a time of year that, you know, maybe people aren't out and about as much in Wisconsin. Maybe people are just staying home and having a cocktail at night or whatever it might be. But I think, you know, it's a good sign whenever, and this happens in the restaurant industry world too. People will be like, oh my gosh, how is that place going out of business? It's my favorite. No, when was the last time you were there? Well, last summer, you know, blah, 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 whatever it might be. And I think it's a good reminder that, like, if we want to keep these local places open, if we want to keep these places thriving and having a good mix of different kinds of breweries, of different kinds of places to go, it's a good reminder to, you know, go visit them, right? Go pick up a six pack at the brewery. Go spend, you know, go buy a couple rounds with your friends out there. It could be an NA thing. You could try some of those new THC seltzers. You could do whatever you want, but it's a good time of year to get out and try something new, I think.
Yeah, this is the time to put your money where your mouth is as far as supporting your treasured local businesses. This is a good weekend to do it. And of course, I'm going to Enlighten tonight to raise one last pint there. But you know, I'll be going to another place that's not closing next weekend. And you know, this is the time of year to support what you care about and try to keep that sustaining for them and for us too. You know, I mean, like, I just want to have as many options as I can. And, you know, supporting the businesses that you care about is part of that.
Yeah. Well, so the places that have survived that, that brewery beer boom from 2016, places like Third Space Brewing or Black Husky, go raise a pint over at one of those spots, one of those local breweries, as these so many other places are struggling. Good time to go support those. And Chris, thank you so much for joining us here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Where can we find your work?
You can look for me. If you follow me on Blue Sky, that's probably the best way to go. It's WI Beer Baron. It's on madison.com, my column. Some of my, I don't do a lot of beer stuff for the magazine, but that's at WalkieMag.com, and we'll soon have the Badger Beer Report, which is an exciting new venture coming out soon.
Good stuff, Chris. Well, thank you so much for joining us here on the Maggie Don Show. We'll be back switching gears a little bit after the break here. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
You're an organ donor, right? Here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Heroicdeed.com.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In November 2022, Michigan voters passed a constitutional amendment enshrining voting protections and expanding ballot access. After the legislature implemented the voters' directive, GOP legislators sued, claiming that only the legislature could make such changes. Proposition 2 mandated 9 days of early voting, protections for voters and election workers from harassment, and a tracking system for absentee ballots. It allowed for the funding of secure drop boxes and the counting of military and overseas ballots if postmarked by Election Day, and several other reforms. Conjuring the independent state legislature theory, which argues that the U.S. Constitution allows only legislatures to control election law, 11 Michigan GOP legislators sued. On December 20th, the Federal Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed the lower court's denial of the Michigan legislators' claim. But importantly, it did so saying that while the individual legislators had no standing to bring the case, a full legislature could, leaving the door open a crack. The U.S. Supreme Court mostly dismissed the theory in 2023's Moore v. Harper case, but Justices Thomas, Gorsuch, and Alito appear to be all in on the theory. For the moment, the pro-voter reforms in Michigan are safe, but be watching for the independent state legislature theory to pop up again soon. We have the decision at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Welcome back to the Maggie Don Show. I'm your guest host this afternoon. My name is Dan Schaefer. Thank you all so much for joining us across the Civic Media Network, across the streaming verse of the Civic Media Network. We're trying things out here. Cardi is on the board here, and we were just joined for the last segment by Chris Drosner, who is the executive editor of Milwaukee Magazine and the author of the Beer Baron column for the Wisconsin State Journal. And he had a lot to say about what is happening in the craft brewery world. So if you missed that conversation, you can always find our shows on the Civic Media website or on your favorite podcast app. Go check that out as well. If you would like to join the conversation with us here on the Maggie Don Show this afternoon, give us a call, shoot us a text. The number is 855-752-4842. Again, that is 855-752-4842. And for this next segment and for the rest of the show here, we are joined in studio here at our offices in Racine, Wisconsin, by Marquette University professor Phil Rocco. Phil, thank you so much for joining us here at the Maggie Don Show on Civic Media.
Good to be down here. I took that wrecked boat, on the shore of Lake Michigan in Milwaukee. I took that one down.
Good.
Well, down here on the boat.
It's a harrowing journey that you've taken here to join us here.
Yes.
Live from our studio in Racine across the statewide Civic Media Network. And so when I was introducing the show today, I was letting our listeners know a little bit about the piece that you recently wrote for the Recombobulation Area. The piece is called Prisoners of the State, and it really gets into kind of the aftermath of something that you really took a deep dive on a couple of years ago at the Recombobulation Area, which was the Act 12, the controversial and super important shared revenue and local government funding law.
Yeah, I always like to start this by saying, instead of having your eyes glaze over, just like think of any public service that you use on a regular basis mm-hmm. or count on, and it's funded by local governments in Wisconsin. But of course, local governments aren't the masters of their own fate. The state determines what they can tax, how much they can tax. It sets all kinds of unfunded mandates and also shares a lot of revenue with local governments, counties, and municipalities, like the second largest source of revenues from the state. So what the state does with its budget matters a lot. And we're going into another budget year with $4.6 billion with a B budget surplus. And so I was really interested to think about, like, where are we now? Or where are counties and municipalities now, a few years after the state kind of injected what was said to be a historic increase in shared revenue funding that had been dormant for years. I was like, where are counties and municipalities now? How are they? Are they doing better? What's their sort of situation? So I wanted to take a deep dive at your long insistence into goings on in Waukesha County.
Yeah, well, I think it is a great example of how these, you know, I think like you mentioned, I think these local governments, the police and fire and public safety and, yeah. and your garbage pickup and
all
snow
the stuff
removal
you take for granted.
And like all of those different things that have a very direct impact on your day-to-day life. But those types of city and county services exist downstream of decisions that happen at the state capitol.
Yes.
And like you said, the state right now, there is this massive state surplus that they, you know, used some of it to fund this increase in shared revenue, kind of made some improvements to the formula that funds a lot of these things to try to better index it to inflation in certain ways. But there, as you illustrated in this piece, there are some limitations to this law. And I think, you know, we heard so much in the debate over this law in 2023 about, oh, this is about Milwaukee mismanaging yeah. its finances.
Right.
And if only Milwaukee would get its act together, then the state would be fine. But it turns out that every last municipality and county in the state is facing many of the same challenges that Milwaukee is. So even as, you know, Milwaukee was blamed and scapegoated in so many different ways in 2023 for needing, you know, funding for needing to raise its sales tax and whatnot. Now, as you took a look at in the piece, and we're going to get further into this in the second hour of the show after the break here, is that Waukesha County is also dealing with many of these same challenges.
Yeah, the sort of the alter ego of Milwaukee, right? The next door neighbor, Waukesha County, which is usually seen as this sort of political inverse, right? It's a heavily right. Republican county, although that's sort of been changing to some extent, but often seen as this place that, you know, doesn't have the problems of Milwaukee, can manage its own finances. Even Waukesha County is, you know, there was a kind of $5 million budget shortfall in the county budget, and a really, I think, interesting tete-a-tete between a Republican, a sort of dyed-in-the-wool Republican county executive, and state legislatures in his own party about how the county was going to manage that shortfall. And I think really reveals that, you know, just because they cite a kind of $274 million kind of increase to shared revenue as the historic increase, you have to sort of ask, compared to what, right? Might be historic, mm-hmm. but compared to what counties and municipalities lost since 2000, it's only about half or less than half of what they would receive had the formula just been updated for inflation.
Well, we're going to be getting into that in depth in the 3 o'clock hour of the show here. Phil is staying with us in studio here, live from Racine, Wisconsin, here on the Maggie Dawn Show. And if you have questions, if you have feedback, if you have comments about this piece, you can find it at the Recombobulation Area. It's called Prisoners of the State. And we want to hear from you as we get into this. As we said, this is something that impacts local communities, cities, municipalities, counties all over the state. So join the conversation with us in the 3 o'clock hour. We will be right back here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm your guest host today, Dan Schaefer, and we will be right back.
Okay.
You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we'll recap the weekend's news, and we bring back Beyond the Cheese. Wisconsin knitwear is featured. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. Matinair on air. This shouldn't be a thing.
Hot Dr. Pepper is the hottest holiday drink, but is it any good?
Jane, I'd like to answer that question.
Yes.
No. Have you ever had a hot soda in your life?
Yes, they're terrible. You can also do apparently 80% eggnog and 20% Dr. Pepper.
Get out of my country.
Matinair on air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News, House Speaker Election. I'm Mike Dubusky. Louisiana Republican Mike Johnson just now being sworn in after being elected the new House Speaker. It comes after the first round ballot seemed to end in a loss for Johnson, with three Republicans voting for other candidates. ABC's Jay O'Brien has what happened next.
They emerge from behind those two closed doors, and then Ralph Norman and Keith Self, they walk up to the Speaker's rostrum, and they change their vote just before the vote is gaveled out, which is allowed under the House rules. It puts Johnson over the threshold that he needed. And then, of course, applause breaks out in the House chamber. There's backslapping, there's hugs, there's handshaking. Mike Johnson even shaking the hand of, at least as we saw on the cameras there, Keith Self, after they appeared to talk behind closed doors.
President-elect Donald Trump also spoke on the phone with Norman and Self before they switched their votes. This is ABC News.